Tired of getting into wrecks on the officials, come on over to Ogre Racing. Speaking of Ogre Racing, we have one of our drivers on today, and he, as many others in the leagues we've raced on, have some racing experience, but this guy's right out there on the front row. Actually, he's in pit road quite often. His name is Rick Shigori. He drives the number 02 in the Ogre Racing series, and he's also a NASCAR pit road firefighter. Rick, welcome. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg. So, glad to be here.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about, I know you've got a lot of firefighting and racing experience, but I want to jump right to the NASCAR aspect here. How did you get involved with firefighting on NASCAR?
Well, like a lot of people, I was a fan first for years and years, and I had a couple of friends of mine. Actually, when I was racing, it was my spotter and my crew chief, and they are firefighters in the town next to mine, and they actually got into working on pit road and was talking to me about it, and I applied in 2021, and I got hired at Martinsville, and my first race was the fall race, right at the end of the season, of course, the cutoff race, but of 21. And so I'm starting, this year will be my third full year working for them.
That's cool. So do you travel around the whole circuit, or are you just in a certain region nearby where you live?
Well, I was working, so it was harder for me to do that. But currently I work for Martinsville and Charlotte and Darlington.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I'm trying to expand that now that I'm retired and have some more time.
Sure.
It's a little easier for me to get to other tracks. So hopefully I'll be able to expand that. That's the goal.
Okay. LCC, you're also a MT instructor for the state of West Virginia. Tell me a little bit about that. That's got to be great, because I know I was a volunteer firefighter back in the 80s, and I know a lot of guys that when they got a little too old to pull hoses into burning buildings, they got into state fire instruction. So tell me about your experience there, because that sounds really cool.
Yeah, so I was a volunteer firefighter for about 10 years. And then I got hired with the city, and I was about 5 years into that, I think. And they asked me if I would be interested in becoming an instructor. So I went to the instructor's course and became an instructor for the fire service. That was where I started at, was teaching new people how to become firefighters. And then they had a shortage of emergency medical technician instructors. So I did kind of an abbreviated training course for that, because I'd already been through the instructor's class, but
sure,
you have to specialize. So I had to do a presentation and stuff on the EMS aspect of it and take a test and score a certain score. And once you do that, then you can start teaching EMTs. So I really was teaching EMT class a few nights a week, or I don't know. I guess the class lasted a couple months, and then I would teach fire service classes also in between that or around that. And it was really rewarding. I like the feeling of being able to give back to an occupation that I've spent so many years in. And I really enjoyed watching them, the students, when I was explaining something or trying to get them to grasp a concept, they would light up, and I could see in their face when it clicked. And I like that.
That's cool.
So I enjoyed it.
So I know a lot has changed in firefighting since I was in, I mean, I'm dating myself going back to the early to the mid 80s. Do you think all the extra requirements, I mean, in New York State are what we called EF, which was the essentials of firematics, which was, I think, like a 35-hour course over like a month or so. And then you could just, you know, be get your gear. And then actually, you didn't even have to do that. You just showed up, joined the firehouse. They voted you in. They handed your gear and you could show up right away. But yeah, right. You had to take essentials of firematics within the first 6 months or a year. I think now that course in New York has gone from, let's say, 30 something hours, and it's tremendous amount of work now. Has that been the same down where you are?
Oh, no. The same in the aspect of when I got started, it was like you, the hours weren't as many, right. Mm-hmm. To get certified. And the book was probably a quarter of the size of the book now.
Yep.
So, you know, things have changed,
right.
Of course, in the fire service, things do. You know, we are constantly learning,
mm-hmm.
So and changing. So you have to keep up with that.
Right.
And the books got bigger and the classes got longer and
yes,
more in depth and more detailed.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So I was sitting here trying to remember, it's been a little bit since I've taught a level one class, but mm-hmm. I was pretty sure it was like 150 hours.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's get into some racing history here. You sent me some photos. I've got your number 02 truck on here, and tell me when you got involved in iRacing, or let's go back to your racing history. When did you get involved in racing, either really driving or watching, and who was your biggest influence that made you a fan?
Oh, wow. So, originally I'm from Massachusetts, and I think at the time that I lived up there, I don't even know that they were racing New Hampshire on the NASCAR level. So I would watch it on TV, and, you know, I was probably, you know, late teens, mm-hmm. been a fan. Of course, then I moved down here in West Virginia, and there's Bristol, Martinsville, Charlotte, all mm-hmm. within, you know, of getting to. So my first race in person was in 1992. And that was Bobby Labonte, Jeff Gordon, and I'm pretty sure it was Kenny Wallace's rookie years.
Oh, wow.
So, my first live race was at Martinsville, and I was just hooked at that point.
yep.
You know, being there in person is so much different. The show, the sounds, everything's so much different. I loved it and never looked back.
Yep. We've been to, I'm up here in New York, and favorite tracks to go to up here. We've been going to Watkins Glen probably for the last 10 years, camping in the infield for the last 7, and just going to give it a break this year. But we've been down to Martinsville, been to Richmond. We, been to Martinsville on 2 separate occasions. One was on a road trip weekend that my youngest son and I took. My mom grew up just outside of Augusta, Georgia, in a small town called Jackson, South Carolina. And this, I think, is like pre-COVID, a year before COVID or 2 years before. They went down for a family reunion and my mom's birthday. And little did they know that my son and I were, everybody else down there knew, but we were coming down there to surprise my mom for her birthday and the family reunion. So we left up here just south of Albany, New York at about 2 a.m. and drove 16 hours straight through to Augusta, Georgia, walked in on them on the, surprised them at the family reunion at the church, went back to Augusta to stay the night with my aunt, left Sunday morning at 5 and drove up to Martinsville to catch that race. It was 55 degrees in Augusta that morning. We pulled into the Martinsville parking lot. It was 38 degrees and snow flurries. and we froze. And then we went back down 2 years ago for the spring race. Great track, super racing. So yeah, it kind of, it's like you said, once you go to the track, it really gets under your skin there. And what about iRacing? When did you get involved in iRacing?
Oh, that's so I went to I think the NASCAR Hall of Fame opened in 2010, and of course, me being me, I wanted to go, but I knew it was going to be crowded and yeah. crazy, so I waited a little while. I went in 2011,
okay,
for the first time, and they have the racing simulators there. So I just kind of walked around the Hall of Fame and did my thing and checked everything out. And then one of the last things I did was went down and got in that simulator, and they used iRacing. And I was like so blown away by the yep. realism mm-hmm. of it. And I was just hooked. And I went home. That very night when I got home, I got my laptop out, my PlayStation Logitech wheel and pedals, and downloaded iRacing, and it took it yep. on my laptop, was able to handle it. And I sat down to the table, the dining room table, for the first time and went and did a race.
Oh, gosh, and that's great.
It was crazy. I loved it, and been doing it ever since. So really, I guess since 2011.
Okay.
A few breaks in between. But yeah, I got started in it in 2011.
Oh, that's cool.
It's changed quite a bit since even then.
Yeah. I remember my son, he was in my laptop, and the pedals, he got a $39 set of pedals with the wheel that clamped to the dining room table and the pedals that sat on the floor. And I go, what's that? He goes, oh, it's iRacing. It's a lot of fun. It's a video game. I'm like, okay. So then, and he was like 12 years old at the time. So he had to use my credit card to get on. And what ended up happening is I get an email from iRacing that I got a 30-day suspension. And I'm like, said to Sam, I said, Sam, what do you know about this iRacing thing here? He says, yeah, I was in a race and I kind of got upset and I wrecked a guy on purpose. I said, yeah, but you're using my name. So that's how I found out about iRacing, and I got into it, and we started out just like, you know, with the laptop, the Logitech wheel. Yep. I still have the 920 or the 923 wheel. I love that. I did upgrade to a set of Club Sport pedals, but I just love that wheel and spin it and slowly added on. And built a little thing downstairs where we were basically sitting on the floor until I could build a platform for it. And it's since grown. And now my man cave downstairs takes up three separate rooms of the basement, because every time you go to the track, you buy more cars, you bring back more stuff, you need more space to put it on. And the wife is not going to let me hang it up on the walls in the living room. So it's all down here in the man cave, including the hood off a truck from the NASCAR series, and on the side of my rig, I've got the front left and front rear fender from Cheese, and that came off of Greg Biffle's car. So that's where it goes.
So, oh, wow.
It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite series on iRacing?
I'm just a fan of iRacing, honestly, but probably my when they changed over to the next gen or gen 6 cars, mm-hmm. I kind of steered away from that. I couldn't get the hang of it.
And, yeah.
So my favorite series is the truck series. I really enjoy running the trucks and how they drive. More in my driving style.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gen 4 series, I like the Gen 4 cars, and so I found that series. So I've been running the Gen 4 series and the truck series quite a bit. Cool. The Xfinity series from time to time, but mm-hmm. I haven't run a cup race in a while. I did the Daytona 500 just because it was the Daytona 500.
Exactly,
but,
yep.
yeah, I pretty much steer clear of that. But I really do enjoy the truck series. And that was one of the big draws to the Ogre League is when David Crum said, hey, and I was watching his live stream, and it looked like he was having a good time, and me and him have been friends for a while.
Oh, cool.
So I asked him, and he sent me the stuff and how to do it to get on with Ogre, and I got with you, and
cool.
There it is.
Yeah, Ogre, I find it's a lot of fun. The guys are great. Hardly any drama, because when I was running some other leagues, and we got up to three leagues in the series, and oh gosh, it's just, there were so many crybabies and stuff like that. I just said, I got to get out of the leagues for a while, and then just decided, you know what? I've got nothing to do in the winter. I miss running leagues, doing the podcast. So started Ogre, and I says, but I want it to be different. So that's why we came up with the 50 and over, and we started out with Arca. Now we do the trucks on Monday nights, and I think we're going to add two more series coming up, because we have a lot of interest in, Sam Maxwell wants to do one on, talk about doing one on Friday nights and running Super Speedway, doing different cars every week. Somebody wants to do the 87s and the Xfinity. So we're going to grow and just keep it going there. And so tell me about, mentioned David Crum, that you guys are on some, other, it's not a league, but just a bunch of guys that get together, and it got so popular, you actually have to do basically heats to get in the race. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the Flying Aces, they've been around for several years, and they're on YouTube at, I think it's Flying Aces TV, but they are two brothers, JW and Eric Salyers. And they live stream races, and you just get in and they send a password, and so you can get in there and race. But there's, you know, I don't know that there's any rules. It's not really a league. It's more of just a group of guys. So I started racing with them a couple years ago, like 2.5 years ago. And it just has grown tremendously.
Cool.
It's, you know, when I first started, it was the same guys. So you got used to who you were racing around, and you knew what they were going to do and how they were going to do it. And that, and, you know, vice versa, they knew how I was going to do, which made it fun. And then it got bigger and you started not recognizing names, and it got so big that here probably, I don't know, I took the last like year and a half off of iRacing, but got back into it, I think back in November or something. But anyway, when I went to get in there, I recognized some names, but not all the names. And we were having to run heat races just to get in to the main race. And, you know, that's fine. But, you know, it's still a lot of fun. There's still a good bunch of guys. You know, still friends with a lot of them. They go to races. And, yeah, it's just a good group of guys that's a lot of fun to race with around.
That sounds cool.
And they make you better because they're good.
Yep. So. It's always better to race with somebody that's a little bit better than you are. So what kind of series and what cars and tracks you run on there?
They run everything from road courses. They might run two or three races a night. And they run, it changes. There's no really schedule. I think he just decides, hey, we're going to run three races tonight. The first one might be a 20-minute race or a 30-minute race you know, at the Daytona road course in a GT3 car or, you know, whatever. He likes road course racing. So they usually have a road course race in there to start the night. And then it might be a truck race or an Xfinity race or a next-gen car or Gen Fork or whatever.
So varies a little bit.
And then they'll pick a regular traditional track to run at. So it's hit or miss. You really don't know till that day. He'll put it out there on Twitter or YouTube, whatever, that they're going to run at such and such track. So, and it's big setups for the most part. I think they've kind of dabbled here recently in an open setup. So, it's pretty much fixed setups that they run.
Yeah. Do you ever run any open setups or figure out any of the mechanics on that? Because, like, I've played around with it, and I find every time I adjust something, I don't know, front right camber, then the gas cap falls off the tank. That's how much I know about engines. Yeah. So I tend to stay with the fix, because the less I can mess up a car, the better.
Right. That's me. I know a little bit of the physics of what a race car should do,
right,
and what adjustments I can make, but that's real life kind of falling into iRacing. But there's so many settings,
sure,
that I'll change something to make something better, and I make it 10 times worse on the other end. So I'm not a technician or any kind of race setup guy by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Just put me in the car and we'll see. If it's loose, I'll tell you it's loose. Tighten me up.
Exactly. <You
know? laughs> That's all I need to know.
Yeah. What I found when I was just messing around with them, like you said, you adjust something and something totally unrelated, or you think that's unrelated, all of a sudden it says it's out of range, and they try to get it back in range, and something, a third thing goes out. So it's the heck with that.
Exactly.
So let's talk about dirt racing. You've got some history with that. I got your car. Were your car number 20 there, the orange car?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got that. Tell me about that there.
Back earlier, you said who was my biggest influence in NASCAR. I guess, and this is probably not a popular choice, but by my car numbers, you can probably figure that one out. It would have been Tony Stewart.
Oh, okay.
And he was a wheelman, and he just could drive a car, and he could drive the trucks, and he could just do whatever. And the thing that probably impressed me with him the most and really just drew me to that was that day. I don't remember what year it was right off. But anyway, he drove the Indy 500 and finished in the top 10. And then he got on a helicopter.
I remember that.
Got hooked onto some IVs and ate and landed at Charlotte and ran another 600 miles and finished in the top 10.
I was
just like, whoa, you know, that's impressive. And I just kind of followed him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the bigger, you know, as he got more time in the series, he really just, I don't know if I just liked the way he didn't hold back. He was, you made him mad. You knew you made him mad.
And you paid for it.
And, you know, sometimes I think he went a little over the edge with that, but I liked it. I just thought, man, he is no bones. You know exactly where you stand, and he will race like crazy.
Yeah,
and he did.
Yeah, my son is—he's a motorsports photographer. My youngest guy, and he was doing some SRX over in Connecticut last year or the year before, and he got to meet Tony Stewart. And he says, "Really nice guy when he's not in a race car." I guess so. You don't want to be on his bad side. Before we went on, we were talking about, you know, the podcast can run anywhere, you know, 15 minutes if it's something short, to the one I did that was almost 2 hours with the grandson of the guy that beat Dale Earnhardt on the last corner in turn 4 of the Daytona 500. And I said, what was it like in the pits? What was, you know, because it was your grandfather, says, what happened in the pits after that? He said, well, he goes, of course, Dale Sr. wasn't too happy, and he came over to the car, pounded on the hood, pounded on the roof, bitched my grandfather out, and then they went out to dinner and had a few beers to talk about it.
Yeah.
So it's something that happens to, I guess it's that guy thing when you get in a race car. So tell me, race dirt for a while. What series did you do that in? What tracks?
So I was just a local Saturday night guy. And I started off watching a friend of mine. He raced in a street stock in a Camaro. And we would all load up after work and head over there and watch Tate run. And so I just thought, man, that would be a lot of fun. And of course, I didn't know anything like, you know, where to even look for a car or anything like that. And had a mutual friend that said, hey, I know where there's a Ford Pinto for the mini stock class, if you're interested. And I was like, okay. So I went and looked at it and I was just like, okay, I want it. So I went out and bought it. Then I didn't have a trailer to haul it. Decided to buy a trailer.
Yep.
And, you know, putting the cart before the horse kind of thing.
Exactly.
And, I just went out there and started running with them. Had no clue what I was doing. I knew I needed a helmet and a fire suit. So I went out and bought that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized I needed tear offs because mud and, all that coming. Yeah. It was just a big, huge learning curve and I had a great time doing it. Mm-hmm. And met a lot of nice guys that I'm still friends with today.
Oh, that's cool.
That was in, I think it was in 2000 that I started doing that.
Yeah.
And I did that for several years. Like any other sport, I guess, more so on the dirt track level. It was fun for a long time and I did it for several years, but when you're holding the gas down and going as fast as your little car will go, it was, and I'm getting past like I'm standing still.
Yeah.
And then you go through tech and everybody passes tech and it's like, yeah. So after a little while of me experiencing figuring out what was going on and knowing what was going on with the car and, you know, putting money into it and going out there and doing it. And then you go through tech and, you know, and that's no slight to the tech guy, by any means.
Right.
But, you know, they scale your car and they wave you with his little flashlight across the scales. And then he looks under the hood and goes, okay. You know, so, there was some things going on, I'm quite sure, that weren't being caught. And, you know, that's just part of it.
Part of it.
But, yeah. And they didn't get caught. Kudos to them.
Exactly. That's what it is. So, pushing that envelope as far as you can, I guess. We still have quite a few dirt tracks up here in New York that are operating, but I see, you know, everywhere the local tracks, you hear people, you know, talking about racing and the local tracks that are, some of them are closing. What's it like down where you are? Is it still healthy dirt tracks or is it just like everywhere else where some of the ones are shutting down?
I think they're all pretty healthy.
That's good.
The one here in Princeton is the owner is an older gentleman and I think he has some health issues, but he leases it out. And usually someone picks it up and runs with it. It's been in operation since probably long before, but my first time going there was probably in 93 or so. Yeah. So it's been, you know, that long that I know of. And I'm sure it was there long before I ever stepped foot on the property. But, you know, there's another one in, I think they run in Wytheville, which is about 30 minutes or so from here.
Mm-hmm.
And they have it. It's right off of 81. It's huge. I think they draw a big crowd. And then Beckley, just north of me, has one. And I'm pretty sure they run pretty regular.
That's good.
So, yeah. yeah, they, and then you had some asphalt tracks near, and they're still going good. I think Motor Mile has scaled back this year. I don't think they're running a weekly series for the first time in a long time, but they're still open to other, you know, bigger events.
Cool. That's good to hear, because it's still pretty healthy here. But of course, we're about, I guess, two and a half, 3 hours north of New York City, and all the city people come up after COVID and they started saber rattling about, you know, the noises at the tracks, up and said, don't even bring that here. Go back to this. Yeah. We're not going to stop racing. Looking at your, some of the messages or that your bio you gave me here, you got a chance to hang out with Allmendinger at the Victory Lane. What was that like?
Oh, man. Oh, what an experience that was. Yeah. So the way that works, you're protecting, virtually you're taking care of one team, but you're splitting, like if the firefighter in the pit to your left needs help, you can run over there because you're just in the next pit stall.
Okay.
And the same with the pit stall to my right. So I'm protecting the gas man and the tire changers in the car.
Sure.
That's in front of me, but I'm also doing the front and assisting the two firefighters or teams beside me.
That makes sense.
To either side of me.
Yeah.
So, but my primary car, the car that's in front of me, and that's the team that you talk to and do all that. Of course, you introduce yourself to the other guys just so they know you're there. But you pretty much focus on that one, and you're there if they need your help on the others. But if that car that you're helping with gets the win, they go to Victory Lane, and of course, you get to go to Victory Lane with that car. So,
how cool is that?
I got to go, and they have the fire extinguishers there. The cars are really hot, and you know, there's confetti flying everywhere.
True.
Possibility, I reckon, but so I got to go to my very first race at Charlotte last year was the Roval, and I ended up going to Victory Lane.
Cool,
and that's pretty special. That's something I'll never forget.
And you couldn't pick a much better guy to go with. He's seems like a heck of a nice guy.
Yeah, he's real friendly. He actually shook my hand, which was really cool.
Yep.
And then, of course he was there talking to his team and saw me and took a second and shook my hand. But the team are, you're in there as they're setting their boxes up and getting everything ready. And, one thing that they stress in our training is that, you introduce yourself and be friendly.
Sure.
Ask them, where you need me to be, and they'll tell you, and you actually get for a short time, during that event, it's like a camaraderie.
Sure.
And those guys will start joking with you it's really fun. You got to remember, one thing that, you're a professional and they are professionals also.
Right.
So it's not when I'm there, it's not, I'm a fan and I can't believe there's Joey Logano. There's, Ryan Blaney. There's all these drivers that you see on TV and you're not there going, hey, sign my coat, So you're there to protect them. They know you're there to protect them. And they include you in that. So I've actually got to stand on, pit road during the national anthem with the team. And when they're high fiving each other, they high five you and you're just
so cool.
Part of the team. And they're making sure that you're hydrating and drinking and, they'll bring you a bottle of water or say, go over the cooler and get you. I hadn't seen you drink. You need to go over there and get you something to drink. And, they really, they watch out for you as much as you're watching out for them. And it's, you know, it's really a really cool thing to be a part of.
That sounds awesome.
The team for the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any close calls where I'm not talking about, you know, jumping over and almost getting hit by a car or anything, but where you actually had to call into action and become that professional firefighter to knock down a flame or something?
I haven't yet, but I've had, you know, friends that have had to put mm-hmm. out fires, but I haven't. I think they've taken care of it. It wasn't when I first started, and it wasn't that long ago, but when I first started and they were running the cars for the, you know, it was a new thing, that all that rubber was building up in the cars and they didn't realize what was going on. So the cars would just be driving. I think probably the most famous one was Kevin Harvick at Darlington,
mm-hmm.
Where he was like maybe in the top 5 second, something like that. And he was running real good.
Yep.
And like coming off of turn four, his car, you know, just starts filling up with smoke. And,
oh, I remember that. Caught fire through. Yep.
He, NASCAR really just took that car in and just luckily Kevin wasn't hurt and, you know, everything worked out and they used that to improve the car and the safety of the car. And it's really not been an issue, with, fires, but I think it was pretty prevalent mm-hmm. when that car first came out.
I remember that.
You know, NASCAR is really, really good about improving things in their tech. And if they see a problem, they're on it.
Cool.
You know, so yeah. And you can see that firsthand with the things that they do and the changes that they make and that we train on and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So yeah, I think as far as me having any close calls, I haven't personally anything to jump into action on. One of the things that we have to do, of course, being, you know, we're there as professionals, it's not just the teams and the drivers that we're trying to protect.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the fans.
Sure.
That are walking around in with their hot passes and stuff. So, if there's a medical emergency or whatever, and we're in that area, you know, I can try to help out a little bit. And then I get on the radio and tell the tower that, you know, you need the med cart. You're out also looking out for, the spectators, the fans.
Right.
And, there's a lot of them on race day, especially at short tracks. It's a more condensed
mm-hmm.
area. So it seems like there's way more people than, say, Charlotte, which is a bigger track, and there's more room to spread out.
Ah, that makes sense. You mentioned to me that you're also cross-trained in extrication for NASCAR.
One of my certifications was extrication, and of course, you know, that's part of what I did every day for my career, extrication and hazardous materials and firefighting and just all the different aspects of what we do in the fire service. So it came into play. I get to, last year was actually my first time doing it. I got to be on the extrication truck, you know, and that's one of them jobs that you hope, you know, like anything else, that you're never needed.
Right.
So, yeah, I got to be in the extrication truck. So that was a pretty cool experience.
Wow.
It's one of those things that, like I said, you hope you're never needed and you can be perfectly fine never pulling a tool off the truck, because that's bad when it happens.
And right,
it's like firefighting. If I'm busy, it's usually a bad thing. So
that's true.
I'd be perfectly fine sitting at the station, perfectly fine standing on pit road drinking a bottle of water, perfectly fine sitting in the extrication truck in the air conditioning.
Oh, the air cannon. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yes. We went the one time we went to Charlotte, it was Memorial Day for the 600 several years ago. And again, it was, I think, pre-COVID. And we had infield passes. We didn't have hot passes, but you know, down there on the infield of the track, and it was hot. And when, like I say, we're just walking around in shorts and t-shirts and baseball caps. And Trick was right. The band playing that day. It was 96 degrees, and they're out there, you know, dressed in their costumes like they do. And like the one guy's, you know, suit and tie, and the other guy dressed up in like a maritime thing. And these guys are 70 years old and they're rocking in that heat. And I'm like, I cannot even imagine what it was going to be like inside a car driving around on a track that day, or standing out there in a firefighter's uniform in that heat.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that was insane. We didn't even stay for the driver introductions.
Are hot.
They are.
They don't breathe.
No, they don't.
Well,
yeah.
You know, so the track, the supervisors, the NASCAR itself, you know, the officials, mm-hmm. and all that, and they're real big on keeping us safe.
Yep.
And they do their very best.
Sure.
So the rule of thumb really is that we have our stuff there in the pit box,
mm-hmm.
But we try to stay out of, as like, I might have my pants on, but I'll have a t-shirt and a hat and
right.
sunglasses until the teams get their fuel. And once the fuel comes to the pit area,
okay.
then, you know, I start putting on my stuff and get ready, because, you know, anything can happen at that point.
Anything can happen.
You're out of it as much as possible until the very last minute.
Sure.
And then it's just drink water, Gatorade, Powerade, whatever it is.
Whatever it takes.
Just constantly drinking. And they walk up and down pit road with coolers of water and just, here you go. Here you go. So they're real big on our safety too. And they watch out for us. I love it. I love it.
That's cool. And everybody nitpicks about the rules, but they're there for a reason. Hey, if you're watching, this is the Sim Racing Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Dreis. Yeah, we've been away for 4 months, and we're back in. And my guest this episode is Rick Shigori. He is driver number 02, the Ogre Racing Series. And he's also a NASCAR pit road firefighter. He calls himself an old guy at 53. Dude, I got you by 9 years. I became an old guy at 62 on the 18th of this year. So your husband, father, and grandfather, and I'm sure that's big roles to play. And it says your faith plays an important role in that. How does that?
Absolutely.
How does that affect you when you're out there on the track?
So, yeah, I've always just, I try to treat people as the best I can. You know, I try not to get mad. But I am human. I get mad.
Oh yeah.
my faith being big to me has kind of directed me in the way that I want to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's guidelines set forth that like tell us how to be a good husband. So I try to do that. And,
yep.
How to be a good father, and I try to do that. You know, not saying I'm perfect, I fall short, but I just try to live by that, and you know, I try to keep my faith and my family as a priority in life.
It's important. It's the same on our end here, and you look back and you see all these little things that happen, and it's like, okay, why did this happen now? And I can come up with, in the last 10 years, any number of things like that. And, well, it's either because you're needed somewhere else immediately, or something happens here because you're going to be needed there 8 months from now. And that has happened several times the last couple of years for me. So you look back and you go, oh, that's what that was about. Okay, I get it. There is a plan after all. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's happened to me also. Actually, me and my wife were talking, and I was telling my pastor about it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, wow, this just happened, and I don't understand why. And then 6 months later, it's like, oh, or 2 months later, or whenever the time was, oh, that's why that happened.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't understand why this is going on or that's going on, but then he shows us why.
That's so, for sure.
I'm not the best at it by any stretch of the imagination, but I really do try, and to just treat people with kindness and even on the track when something happens, you know, I wasn't the guy that was going to come over there and punch you in the face and on iRacing, I'm not going to be on there, you know, and you'll probably see it the more we race around each other, which we've done now for several weeks, but it's you know, I'm not that guy that's going to get on there and just throw a fit and it happens and you move on.
That's it.
You know, I'm not going to retaliate if something bad happens. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I'll drive them clean as I did the race before. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well,
I try to treat people with that respect and that level of respect. And it worked throughout my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not at 2 or 3 in the morning. I wasn't as joyful.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was still, I still gave them 100%.
There you go. Yeah.
Just maybe wasn't with a smile.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. So,
That's just the way my faith is.
Good and, for you.
You know, I try to put my family first in everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God is a huge part of that.
Oh, it's a huge part. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to do every once in a while, depending on the churches we were in. Being up there too, I've been asked to, you know, do a sermon a few times, and that's an awesome responsibility, because it's like, oh, hey, this is going to be cool. Well, you know, you get put, park your ego. You're here to for everybody else, not for yourself. So it's a big part in my life too. Rick, anything you want to say before we wrap up here? I want to thank you for being part of Ogre Racing. I can't say enough about how courteous and all the other drivers are, and we haven't even had to invoke the one and done rule except for once when somebody gets in a wreck, and I just, you know, had to jump in one time and say, guys, if you had, you know, say your piece, if you need to carry it on, go take it private and get it off the mic. So it's great bunch of guys to race with. Everybody's encouraging, and I want to say, you know, thanks for being a member of Ogre Racing, and we'll see you on the track.
Yeah, and Greg, I agree 100%. This is probably the most fun I've had on iRacing for a while. In my recent, you know, it's been a while since I've had this much fun running, and I feel like I can run around these guys and, you know, we might bump doors or whatever, but it's going to be part of racing, and it's fun. And if I make a mistake, I'm going to apologize. If they make a mistake, they are right on the mic apologizing.
That's for sure.
And you, yeah, it's just clean racing, and I appreciate the work that it takes to do it and what all you're doing to give us a place to race that's clean and fun. And it is pretty amazing. The one thing, my Richmond race in the truck series, my big victory. Yeah. So, that was pretty awesome. And I was tickled. I hadn't got to, bring a vehicle to victory lane in a little while. So
same here.
That one was special.
Yep.
During the course of that race, just the point of the courteousness and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think one time coming into lap traffic, I had to say, just go high. That guy scooted right out, went right up high.
Yeah.
Every other driver other than, you know, that one time, but he got straight out of the way.
Right.
So, but every other time they would either watching their relative or looking in the mirror and seeing me coming as a leader.
Exactly. Yep.
Straight up to the wall. Didn't have to move my line or try to race around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made it I thought the courteousness of this group of guys is amazing, and it's refreshing.
Yeah, that is good. And pretty much by, you know, luck of the draw, because I just throw it out there, and, you know, if you tell me you're over 50, I'll take your word for it. And one guy says, I'm 39, can I race? And I says, well, come back in the... Or one guy, I think he was in his 20s that we raced with somewhere. I said, well, come on back when I'm 90 and you're 60 and see if we're still around. If you had to pick another series for Ogre, so we got ARCA and the truck series. If you were to jump on that page there and make a suggestion for another series to run, which one would you choose?
Like we were talking earlier, I like the Gen 4s. Mm-hmm. I like the 87s too.
I love the 87s.
Is a huge challenge.
Yeah.
No matter what track they're running on, those cars were a handful. And I like the 87s. I like the Gen 4s.
Okay. Somebody asked me about the 87s. And when I started driving them, I said the best way to describe it is you're 16 years old. You just got your learner's permit, and Grandpa gives you the keys to his 1977 Pontiac Bonneville, and you're taking it out on the road. Or that's too big and too hard for you to drive.
Oh, man. Those guys that race those cars in real life, if that's what they went through, I wouldn't know. But if that car is an exact scale version of, or sim version of the real car, that's why they were as big as they were.
Yeah.
Those guys were amazing to drive them cars week in, week out at the speeds that they drove them at.
Exactly.
That was crazy.
Yeah. So I kind of lean into that or Xfinity, something that's, I just find the Gen 7s too easy to drive and too easy to get comfortable in them and like the challenge. Well, Rick, I want to thank you so much for stopping by this morning. And, let everybody know that this will be up on Twitch. I've got to run out for a bit, but I'm going to come back and do some editing this afternoon. It'll also be forever on YouTube on the Sim Racing Podcast. That's my channel there where you can check out past podcasts I've done for other leagues. Check out some of the other people we've had on. We've had we've had a NASCAR firefighter. We've had NASCAR officials, some pit road guys, drivers in Xfinity, drivers in truck series. But most of it is regular iRacing guys like us. And we'll find out that it's a big family. And just about anybody that's a real serious iRacer has some track story to tell in real life, too. Like what I do, it's like my son, he's 24. He shoots for a couple NASCAR photographer teams. He does motorcycle racing, and he was doing SRX, and now he's doing some track series for Porsche clubs, and he's booked every weekend through the end of the year. And Lime Rock Park is about an hour from where I live, and I volunteer over there on some of their major events, driving drivers around and helping out, and it's fun. So it's a big community, and it's just a lot of fun. So, Rick, we'll see you on the track. If you're not racing Thursday night, we'll catch you again Monday in the truck series.
Yeah, I'm planning on being there. Bring my ARC car to what is it, Kansas?
Las Vegas is this week.
No, Las Vegas. Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Las Vegas.
All right.
So I will see you then.
All right. You have
Thanks
yourself
for
a good day.
Me, Greg.
Oh, this you're welcome.
A lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It.
Take care.
All right.
It was Rick Shigari. He drives car number 02 in the Ogre Racing Series. He's also NASCAR pit road firefighter. He used to drive on the dirt track back when he was growing up, and you can check this out on twitch.tv/GregDrace. Later on, the Sim Racing Podcast on YouTube will also be on Spotify. Tune in that radio app. I believe very shortly, if not already, SiriusXM. And thanks for listening, and we'll be back every week with updates on Ogre Racing. If you know somebody out there in the sim racing world that wants to come on and tell their story, whether you're just a sim racer like I am, or you've got track experience, or just want to chat racing, hit me up on Facebook. And that's it for this episode of the Sim Racing Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Dreis. Thanks for watching.